Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Today we have a return guest. I think, as officially, you are the most returned guest. You and Travis Wu are, like, in contention with each other for... I don't think that's true. I think, actually, it's you and Eugene. Oh, but
thank God.
Andrew Brown's on the podcast.
Welcome back, buddy.
Hey, man. What's going on?
Excited to have you here. We haven't seen you since you became a genius that designs games.
Yes, I do design games now, and it's awesome. Yeah. Follow your dreams, kids.
Yeah, he used his magic smarts, and now he has a real-life job that isn't just spiking magic tournaments, though he still does that.
Yes, that's also fun as well.
Yeah, sweet. So this is episode 57, I think, right?
Maybe? I don't know.
Something like that.
I don't count those things.
Yeah,
I just type them based off of my Gmail account and what my last email said.
I think this is 57, and we are trying to do a thing now where we just do this in one take. There's no editing, so we're just going to riff off it if we do anything wrong. Don't curse. We don't ever do that, but just in case, so a reminder.
This is the MMCast Raw.
This is the MMCast uncut. Live, uncut, unedited.
Deal. Yeah.
All right. So today we're talking about two things. So first off, you had a pretty good weekend beyond Halloween and all of the fun that that entails. You top forward a RPTQ.
Yes, I did. I top forward the San Diego RPTQ.
Which cool. stands for Regional Pro Tour Qualifier, for
Regional
those of you that are
Pro Tour Qualifier.
New.
Newer, because it's a thing that's new this year. This is the, what is this, the second round of them,
this
right?
This is the third RPTQ, I
okay.
believe.
The first one was the...
The first one was for Origin.
The first one was for
Origins,
I think.
I thought they were going to give out one promo per set, and they just
yeah yeah. This is the third one because the
it's per year, not per tournament.
Oh, it's per year.
So
got
Liliana
it.
Vale was the promo for all of 2015. Snapcaster Soccer Master will be the thing for all.
He
next
actually
year.
Looks a lot like Ronaldinho if you put them side by side.
And you got one.
I did not get one. We got the Liliana. This one was the Liliana.
Oh, it's
still 2015.
Got it. Got it. I was confused.
I mean, it's November, so we're close. So
right.
I see where you're confused.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But still in 2015.
Would you have preferred the Liliana or the Snap?
Whichever one is more money to a vendor.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did you play?
I played Blue Red Splinter Twin.
The classic just U/R twin.
Yeah. Well... Also called blue-red tokens. You make a million tokens and you attack them.
People actually call it that? No.
No, I just call it that to throw people off. And they're like, oh, you're playing Young Pyromancer? No, I'm just playing Deceiver Exarch and copying it a million times.
Is it the deck that you think at like the pro level has the most play in Modern?
No, Amulet easily has the most play. It's one of the hardest things I've ever tried to do, and I recommend not trying it unless you are a Stone Cold Master.
Did you like consider playing it?
No.
If you could, okay, you didn't.
Well, I mean, I've played it many times in practice matches, and my mistake rate was at least like 20-40%. So,
where do the mistakes come with that deck the most? You think?
Turn one is one of the hardest things to like sequence out because you play your land and then turn two comes around and then you have to realize how you're going to go off. It's essentially setting up how you're going to go off is the hardest thing to play, the hardest thing to do with Amulet. Like once you play Titan, it's pretty easy to like figure out what to do. You're like, okay, get Boros Garrison, get Slayer Stronghold, all right, haste, attack, trigger again, Growth Chamber, Talaria West, float mana, pick up Talaria West, transmute, get another Summoner's Pact or a Pact of Negation, and then you just bury them in your redundancy.
So really, the part of the deck that most people who have watched coverage would think is the hardest is not the hardest, which is everything you just said. It's sequencing those first couple turns.
Sequencing the first couple turns and figuring out how you are going to go off is a lot easier than just going off.
Interesting. So, okay, Twin, you chose to play Blue-Red Twin. I know over the summer, we were talking during PPTQ season about playing Grixis Twin. So why the move back to Classic?
Classic Blue-Red... Although the differences in most of the deck list is only about 6 to 7 cards, those 6 to 7 cards are uniquely different in each deck. So in the black one, you play Terminate, Kolgon's Command, and
Tassigar,
right? Those are your options there. And in the blue-red version, you get to play Electrolyze, Lavamancer, Click, and possibly more Spell Snare Dispel, which offers a little bit more counterplay, while the Grixis one is a little more upfront, kind of remove your threats rather than dig and or prevent the other person from kind of disrupting your combo.
Now, I notice your list plays one Lavamancer, one click, right?
Yep.
Main. So in a 60 like that, I mean, what's the point of having one of like that? They just randomly come up and they're pretty good most of the time, but you don't want to draw them game one very often? Or
it's kind of miserly a little bit, but one click is normally the right number in most of these decks, and the one Lavamancer was a concession to kind of burn decks, affinity decks, infect decks that you don't want to, like, if you draw it, it's going to win you the game. And if it was, like, let's say, like, another redundant spell, like a peak or something, the upside isn't exactly there.
Gotcha. What was your first match of the tournament?
I played against Affinity Round 1.
Like, what kind of affinity? Was it like a Master just, Affinity or like a...
Just regular kind of...
Just classic.
Classic Affinity, right. Which is a quite a good matchup for Splinter Twin because Deceiver Exarch and Pestermite, they're just so good against them because they equip plating and you can just tap their plating thing down. If they tap out, obviously they're dead. But obviously you don't have Splinter Twin all the time, but it's pretty easy to control the action with all of your lightning bolts and tappers.
Now, your suite of counter magic that you play in this version, so mm-hmm. you've got two Spell Snare, one Spell Pierce, one Cryptic, two Dispel, four Remand.
Uh-huh.
Where do you come up with that split? I mean, what's the ones and twos? And
the four Remand's pretty consistent. The weird part is the one Spell Pierce, one Cryptic Command. Normally, it's two Cryptic Command. But in a tournament that you're just trying to spike and win as many matches as possible, you're not playing 15 rounds of Swiss. You're playing, like, at maximum 8 rounds. I played 8 rounds, right?
Right.
So the Spell Pierce is more of, I want to get them. I want this to be more higher impact in the times where I draw it rather than the other Cryptic Command.
And it's less common, so maybe they're not going to play around it maybe yeah. quite as much.
You're essentially just trying to get people because you're assuming that a person at an RPTQ has already won a PPTQ. So you are assuming that they are not just the run-of-the-mill player. Hey, I just showed up at this tournament. They actually had to put some investment in this. So you're trying to take their level of commitment and their level of practice. Like, oh, I played against Twin. They don't play... I don't expect Spell Pierce. So me, I was just trying to get them, like, they're expecting something, and then I bring out the Spell Pierce.
Now, like, so with the whole mixture of counterspells here, we were just talking a little bit about how good Dispel has become in Modern, and how Dispel yeah. is almost like the premier counterspell you want to be playing.
Yes.
That or Remand.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but if you were looking at all the mixture of the blue counterspells, a new player might say, well, where's Mana Leak? Why don't you play any Mana Leak? That's such a good card. Why would you never move back towards that, or why is that so absent?
Remand cycling itself is a lot better in this deck because you're not trying to permanently answer their threat. You're trying to delay them long enough that you can twin them. Is this the big difference between Remand and Mana Leak in this deck?
Gotcha. Okay, so then we no longer really will ever see Kiki-Jiki in these decks. It's pretty much gone.
Yeah, it costs too much. And with the new invention of Dispel, going off on 5 is much of a more real thing because you have Splinter Twin and Dispel up, and obviously it's your turn, so they can only play instants. So,
would you say Snapcaster is the best card in the deck?
I would say Serum Visions is the best card of the deck.
Interesting. Why? Yeah. Why is that?
It lets you set up your draws. The safest place for your combo is always on the top of your deck, because Jund and Abzan is your worst matchup. Them not knowing what is on the top of your deck is often a great boon in beating them, because if they feel safe, they will tap out, and in which case you can twin them.
Gotcha. Okay, so you play a 4 Snapcaster, and you said you play the 4 Serum Visions, which I think in our episode last week we said Serum Visions was the number 2 best common in the format.
Yeah, Serum Visions followed by Lightning Bolt.
You play 4 Lightning Bolt in here as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. So then you have 4 Deceiver Exarch, 2 Pestermite.
Yes.
Again, that's pretty standard nowadays.
Very standard.
Is there ever a situation you would consider building this with more Pestermites? Not less Exarchs, just like more combo pieces?
I think the rug decks play the 4 quad, but that's because they're much more about beating down with their creatures,
right?
Versus just like in this deck, they're much more of a I have this to win with it.
Yeah.
Versus those where it's like I'm trying to threaten their life total so they can't worry about the Splinter Twin combo, and then I sometimes win with it
because they've got the Tarmogoyf, so they've just got more firepower.
In some of the rug twin decks, I've seen the innovation of Bounding Krasis,
right?
It's pretty sweet. Although it does still die to Lightning Bolt, you just have to weigh the difference between do you want a 2-1 flyer or do you want a 3-3 groundy?
Interesting. Okay, so you got the 4, you got the 2. I suppose if you wanted to get clever, you could replace one click with one Pestermite or something if you really wanted to go like 3.
The click is pretty important in a lot of the blue mirrors. You want to have, because you're filtering through your deck so much in some of the blue mirrors, because you can't really like accelerate the game by just twinning them.
Yeah.
So the longer the game goes, the more likely your draw click, and having perfect information on your opponent's hand or partial because they draw a card is like a pretty big advantage.
So then, aside from 4 Splinter Twin, which is obvious, you play 1 Roast.
1 Roast.
Who hates the card Roast so much? Does Eugene hate the card Roast?
I think Tom Lapeel was the one.
Tom Lapeel hates Lapeel.
Yeah, blatantly. Yeah, we're right.
Yeah. Can't stand Roast.
Yeah, he made it, but he hates it.
Yeah, it's funny. And you feel okay playing 1 Roast in here?
1 Roast is great. Yep.
Interesting. Your sideboard here, the card that sticks out to me, number 1, is Pia and Kieran Nalar. You have 2 of those in your sideboard.
Yes. Pia and Kieran Nalar was an excellent card for me this weekend. It's essentially the red Lingering Souls.
Right.
And it's so versatile in some of the matchups. So in most of the 3-color matchups, that's where you're weakest as blue-red twin. So if you're playing Jund, Abzan, or Grixis twin, you're at a disadvantage because their cards, they have more removal. You don't have as much removal.
Yeah.
So what you normally want to do is you play the P in Kieran. It's either a clock, it's defense, and it's great Liliana protection.
For those of you that don't know what Pia and Kieran are, it's a legendary creature out of Origins that is 2 red, 2 colorless for a 2/2 legendary creature human artificer. When Pia and Kieran enters the battlefield, put 2/1/1 colorless Thopter artifact creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. And then it has like a siege gang commander type of deal where it's for 1 red, 2 colorless, sacrifice an artifact. Pia and Kieran deals 2 damage to target creature or player. So not a card that's seen a lot of play in Twin Decks to this point.
Yeah,
we talked about that in our top 10 modern or Magic Origins review.
Yeah,
and it definitely made our list. And part of the reason, and I imagine this is still true, is it's good against Infect decks and Affinity decks to an extent because so many of their threats are X1 flyers.
Yeah,
and maybe that was also more in the talk for Jund decks where not necessarily Twin where you have the removal to kind of go through.
Right.
By the time you'd play it, I imagine at 4, those decks are almost going to always have killed you.
Yeah, Twin has a lot better answers to Infect and Affinity than Jund does because you get you're playing Ancient Grudge, which is ridiculous against both of those decks.
Well, and Snapcaster Mage, which is
Snap's very good. Like Ancient Grudge against Infect is such a backbreaker too because like it's essentially Stone Rain and Terminate in the same card. And often they bring in more Spellskites, and they go up to 4, and you can just 2-for-1 them all day.
I would always bring in more Spellskites.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got P and Kieran Nalar. You have 2 Keranos, God of Storms, which is like a sweet, sweet, sweet card that is...
Yeah.
It's like the blue-red staple control mirror trump card.
It's the one you see. Excellent. Didn't we see that? What was that same tournament with that crazy 7 Lightning Bolt game? It was the one that got won.
The match that what's his face won against Lantern Control was off.
Yeah,
of the back
off of because he had him locked out and he actually resolved the Keranos. Did you see that?
I did not.
He actually had him locked out with the whole, and he resolved Keranos. He let him draw it, and then he ended up killing him off Keranos because he couldn't reshuffle the top enough times. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. It's like one of the only ways it seems you can beat that. You've played a couple of those, a couple Blood Moons.
Blood Moon, it's you got to play it.
Right. Would you ever consider playing more than 2?
Not in this current metagame.
Okay.
Unless I expected a bunch of Tron and Amulet, which is already a good matchup, so...
Sure.
Blood Moon here is more really for Jund decks because it's kind of a get them card. If they don't play around it, then they just lose.
So the last bits in here, you said a couple of these changed to the list that you sent me in the first place.
Yeah,
so the Raining Volley became...
A Spellskite.
Okay, so there's 1 Spellskite in your sideboard.
Yeah, 1 Spellskite. Riser. Yeah, it was pretty good. I drew it a bunch of times a weekend.
And then the Roasts changed, you said?
There's still 2 Roasts. There are 2 Negates.
Okay, 2 Negates, so you got rid of...
1 Dispel.
1 Dispel, okay. So now you have 2 Negates, 2 Pyroclasm, 2 Roast, 2 Grudge.
Yep.
Okay, and you felt that was pretty solid
sideboard. 7 2 ofs, and then the Spellskite.
When you're building a sideboard, and it's like it's a variant format like this, it's not like super, super high variance. It's pretty controlled. Is 2, like a bunch of 2s, is like usually where you like to go? You don't like to max out anything?
With a deck with Serum Visions and Snapcaster Mage, you're usually filtering through enough of your deck to where you're going to see 1 of them if you have 2. So 2 is pretty much the right number unless your matchup against X deck is just so horrendous that you just want to play four of a card.
So you started with Affinity. And
yep.
What do you have to top eight? Do you have to X1 this?
This was interesting. I'll tell you what happens at the end, so I guess we'll just go round by round.
Yeah, let's do it.
Now. So round one, I played against Affinity, and then it's pretty standard matchup. Game one, I turn forward him. Game two, he removed my combo as I went for it, and then in game three, I just grudged him out of the game. Like, I drew both of them, and obviously they just cannot win from that point.
And with Grudge, you play usually a single Stomping Grounds.
Yeah,
deck, right?
So you play four Misty Rainforest and four Scalding Tarn.
Right.
So your Misty can get your red source.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is like sometimes you'll see those games in coverage where somebody draws the Stomping Grounds at the beginning of the game and somebody on coverage will be like, and he's clearly playing Rogue Twin here or he's playing Teamer Twin.
Yeah.
That's like the rookie mistake. I've like heard like a bunch of commentators make that mistake.
Yeah, they're not the best.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Next round, I played against Infect, which is another great matchup. Just, again, like the Pester My Deceiver tapping their threats is very, very powerful. And their only real defense against you game one is Vines of Vastwood.
Okay.
So they like, Vines your guy as you twin it.
Because it has that. For those of you who don't know, like, Vines, the reason Vines is so sweet is because it's one of the cards where you can target your own or their creature, and it states that, like, because of it, it can't be, like, I think the exact wording is...
Yeah, it's essentially Shroud.
Yeah, target creature can't be a target of spells or abilities your opponents control this turn.
Yeah.
Wait.
It's hexproof, but it's not giving the ability hexproof.
Yeah.
So the creature... can be only targeted by your spells.
Yeah.
It's like it's kind of how like old lifelink, if you give a creature that has old lifelink, new lifelink, or actual lifelink, it gets double the life bonus.
Right.
Yeah. Similar kind of like weird ruling because it's not a keyword.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like an underused mode on that card. Vines is a really good card.
They're Vines great. Is sweet. Yeah. But then in game two, I brought in the Pyroclasm, the Grudges, the Blood Moons. It's very hard for them to win post-sideboard. Like, they can play Hierarchs and Spellskites, but you can just swipe them all away with Pyroclasm and Grudge.
Yeah.
And obviously Blood Moon just shuts them down. I think they only play like two forests or something.
Yeah. When you think about sweepers in Modern, what like do you think that Pyroclasm is just absolutely far and away the best sweeper? Or do you sometimes like to play Fire Spout or sometimes like to play the other one?
Anger.
Yeah, Anger.
It's definitely metagame dependent. Now the pod's gone, I definitely think Pyroclasm is a choice because you don't really have to deal with Finx or Voice anymore. So there's no real reason to play Anger anymore.
Interesting. Okay, so you're that's your round two.
Oh yeah, and then round three I played against Boggles, which is
somebody who's actually playing that, huh?
Yeah, I thought it was a great deck choice because most of the good players are going to try and play 50-50 decks, and the 50-50 decks like Jund and Twin, you can kind of just coin flip them and just get lucky. But he didn't get very lucky, and I just twinned him a bunch.
Yeah,
like their only real defense against you in sideboard is suppression field,
right?
So I spelled Snared as suppression field, and he lost the game.
Doesn't Blood Moon just absolutely hose that deck too? Because they play all non basics, 100%, right?
No, they have a forest. They have two forests, one plains.
Right.
Yeah, but normally you don't want to play Blood Moon against them unless you're on the play.
The main card that hoses them is Spellskite.
Right.
Yeah, Spellskite just demolishes them.
They either have to have Path or they don't win.
Yeah, Spell Snare is just unreal against them as well. Like, it hits Cornet, it hits Spirit Dancer. It's so good.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that's
that was round three. Round four, I had to play against Jund, against a player who is competent at playing Jund.
That's a tough matchup, right?
That is a very, very, very difficult matchup. Like, game one, there was a couple sequences where, like, I drew super perfectly, but he just played it better, and he didn't leave any openings for me to kill him. Like, he played it pretty well. Then in game two, I don't know. He just kind of Junded me out. I tried to twin him. He had the removal. Not much you can really do there.
So in a major tournament like that, now you're 3-1, and you know there's going to be seven rounds. And you know that if you lose again, you're probably out. So what does your attitude adjustment have to sort of at that point? Do you click into a different mode, or are you like, I'm probably going to get one loss, I'm okay?
No, I try to take every match one at a time, and if I make a mistake or if I lose, I don't dwell on it because there's a lot of ways to lose a match of Magic, and there aren't very many ways to win one, so your disposition and your mental state throughout the tournament is almost paramount over your playing skill, because if you think you're going to lose, you're going to lose. If you think you're going to win, you might win.
So you're somebody like in a group like this, a lot of good players, because you have to have won a PPTQ, which is pretty hard to do in the first
place.
There
were six of us in our little group that qualified.
So, and you've also played on multiple Pro Tours now. Mm-hmm. You've won a Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got plenty of experience at the highest level. When you're looking around the room and you mm-hmm. get a loss like that, like, do you just kind of play it like you've always played it between matches, just kind of like shooting the breeze with your friends and laughing at, or are you like super focused and you kind of like an athlete would, you know?
I don't know. It's important to stay positive, and not talking about it too much about your loss is probably the best for your morale of the group as well.
Right.
Because you're trying to help your friends win too. So you try and keep it positive. Be like, oh yeah, I messed up, or hey, I didn't get there. It was a tight match and it was a good game. Like, that's probably the most you can say.
Okay, so you pick yourself up from your bootstraps and you go into round five now.
And I'm against Amulet, which is normally a great matchup.
Okay.
So game one. What?
Sorry, you know, continue.
Yeah, so game one, I combo him on turn four, right? Not much he can do. Game two, he has the turn two on me, so I don't win that one. And then in game three, I kept a borderline on the play with one land Serum Visions and didn't really get there. So I actually took my second loss right there.
Wow, so you're X2 at that point.
I was X2 at that point.
And at that point, you don't know if you can still top eight, right?
I don't know if I can top eight or not.
But because you started hot and you won three in a row, your breakers are going to be decent.
Yes.
Hopefully the guys that you were beating continue to play well.
Yes, and luckily they did continue to play well.
Nice.
So after that, you know, you get yourself your coffee or your whatever, and you come back, kind of just start fresh, just try and win one match at a time. And then round six was another Amulet player, but this time, game one, same thing, turn forward him. Game two, he Titaned me, but he only had 16 damage because that's all he can do, and then I just twinned him.
Right. That's one of the big misconceptions about that matchup is that, like, they go for it and then sometimes they just don't kill you. And then they've gone all in, and if you can still kill them the next turn. So in my testing all summer against that deck, I kept finding that like if you can sort of grind it, you've got them close within a turn or two, sometimes you can dodge it.
Well, they can only deal 16 damage to you if they have one Amulet out and they have enough mana, cuz they go Stronghold into Garrison, which is 8/8, 8/6 double strike.
Right.
So it's not enough.
Totally. Have to go for it the next turn. Okay, so you win that match.
So I win that match, and then I look at, that's round six is done. So then they put up standings. I have the highest tiebreakers of all the X2s. So this is my winning in, right?
Right.
So I play against a friend of mine who was on my Origins Pro Tour testing team. I know he's a great player.
Yeah.
And he was playing Jund. Which
got the number one worst card for you in the whole format, right, Liliana?
Liliana and Abrupt Decay are just very difficult to just get any handle against them. But game one, he kind of makes a critical error where he doesn't kill my Grim Lavamancer. He chooses to plus Liliana, and then I'm able to kill the Liliana. Then we trade some more resources, and we get into a top decking war where I just draw too many Snapcasters for him to really get back into it. And then in game two, I go for the Blood Moon on him, but obviously he's a good player. He starts fetching basics.
Right.
And I have this crappy 3-mana enchantment that's doing absolutely nothing, and I lose the game, right?
So you go to game three.
Going to game three.
How are you sideboarding here, by the way? I'm curious against Jund. What's your plan?
Normally in game one, after game one, you go for the Roasts, the Blood Moons, the Pias, and the Kuranos, right? And normally you try and take out, like, Electrolyze, some amount of Bolts, some amount of the combo. I had been talking with him before the match, or before the tournament, we were kind of working together a little bit on how I would sideboard against him. And I told him, normally I take out the Pestermites, two of the Splinter Twins, you know, try and keep them honest while playing your long game of Kuranos and Pia and Kieran.
Because he knows you, so you're willing to give him your strategy a little bit.
Yeah, because because we're friends, and that's what I told him before the tournament. But after the game three had happened, after the game two had happened, where he saw I was Blood Mooning him, this is, like, not going well for me. So I put in the entire combo back in, just two Pestermite, four Deceiver, four Splinter Twin, right?
Right.
Then I just combo on him turn four, and he doesn't see it coming. He taps out for a Liliana, and I'm able to just combo him. And he's like, I didn't think you were brought back in the combo. And I'm like, well, I mean, I did. I was trying to level you. Success.
Nice. So that should be right there, just like the getting to the top eight should be a reminder to any tournament player. you'll hear this thing happen where you're at a tournament and you've played a few games and you pick up your second loss in the 7-round tournament, mm-hmm. and all you're going to hear is the negativity from around the room, people just being like, oh, you can't top 8 anymore. You should.
Oh, you're dead.
You shouldn't even play it out. Let's just get out of here, because maybe they've got 3 losses and they just want to go eat or whatever.
Yeah.
And I hate that, because I'm always like, nah, I'm here to play. I want to play the game. So if mm-hmm. there's even a small chance, I'm going to finish the tournament. And it should be a reminder to anybody out there, just finish the – like, once you're mathematically eliminated, that's fine. Yeah. But if you still are even like a shred of being close – I mean, our friend Eric made a pro tour getting 9th at a PTQ – or not at a PTQ.
GB?
At a
– I have no idea.
I can't remember. Pro tour.
Yeah, whatever.
Somehow he made a pro tour finishing uh-huh. 9th, and then something happened with somebody in the top 8, like a disqualification or something.
Eric Wydetz?
Years ago. He made a pro tour back in like 06 or 07.
Yeah.
And they bumped him up. And nice. That's how he made it. So because he finished the tournament and he finished 1 outside of the top 8.
So never leave. Just stay there until the end of the top 8 just in case.
Unless you're X4, then you can leave.
Yeah, exactly. So awesome. So okay, so you get to the top 8. And this is really interesting what you were telling me on the car on the way here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the top 4 make the Pro Tour and there's no monetary prize you're getting aside from just the invitation and the promo, you just get the top 8, win a match, and you're done.
Yeah, I left.
Semi or final.
There's no semis. There's no finals. Everybody just kind of... high fives, shake hands. Yeah. All right, see you later.
So that's really fascinating, because mm-hmm. now you literally just have one game to win.
Yep.
So what was your matchup?
So I was playing against another friend, Vidianto Wijaya, very, very, very good player.
Photographic memory.
Yeah, the best versus player to ever walk the earth, right?
Right.
He was playing Grixis Twin with Jace Vryn's Prodigy in it, 4-of.
Interesting. That's cool, because we're going to talk about that card in just a minute.
Yeah. So normally I'm not favored in this matchup, because I said I'm normally a dog to all the 3-color decks. So we have a drawn out game 1.
Why is that, by the way, really quickly? Why are you a dog to all the 3-color decks?
Because they have more removal and you have more cantrip-y cards. So like
you're more efficient, but they're a little more control.
Yeah, yeah. So game 1, we have like a pretty drawn out game where we draw go for a while, sculpting our hands with Lighthouse and Serum Visions.
Oh yeah, I did notice in your list, by the way, you played 2 Lighthouse. That should be noted.
2 Lighthouse and 1 Ghost Quarter.
Yeah, because that's pretty relevant. I remember when the 1 Lighthouse started to get played in these lists. So mm-hmm. playing 2 is ballsy. I mean, that's
Lighthouse is the best card in the mirror by a long shot.
Yeah, just puts you ahead.
Well, yeah, because you're just trying to sculpt your hand for the turn you're going to win.
Yeah.
So like ripping through your deck is definitely like one of the best things to be doing.
Yeah, I would say 2 Lighthouses has been closer to standard
for a while now.
For at least this summer, for the last season.
Do you think that, so this is a kind of interesting, you mentioned mm-hmm. he was playing 4 Jace Vryn's Prodigy in the main deck. Mm-hmm. So that's his looter. Is he also do you think he's also playing Lighthouses on top of his?
Yeah, he was playing a Lighthouse.
Okay. But
Grixis only can play 1 Lighthouse.
Because they can't afford it color choice, right? Okay. Interesting. All right, so he's playing Vryn's Prodigy in
In game 1, that's like, if I don't bolt it, it's pretty difficult, and Kolaghan's command is really good. So like after a long kind of attrition-y war, I go for it with only 2 pieces of backup, and he has 3 cards, so I kills me.
Right.
He kills my guy, and then he twins his own guy, so I lose that game.
How do you board against this?
So against in the sideboard, you essentially bring in nearly everything. Like you bring in the Spellskites, you take out some of the combo. You bring in Pia, Kiranos, you bring in 1 Rose, Spellskite, the Negates.
Right.
I think that's about it. Yeah. So you bring in those cards, and then you just try to grind them, attrition kind of war. Normally their deck only plays 1 Kiranos, but my deck plays 2. So pretty much it's a mini game to see who can get Kiranos out first to outvalue the opponent. So I got my Kiranos out first, and that definitely drew me enough cards to where when we had the big counter war, I had 4 pieces of backup, and he only had 3 cards, so I twinned him out.
So question for you, like you play a card like Jace, you flip it, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you can start flashing spells back, or you play a card like Kiranos, and you start actually just generating that incremental advantage.
Yeah.
How many of those sort of... you're creating card advantage off of 1 card multiple times. Uh-huh. How many of those type of losses can you sort of like have your experience? I'm sorry, I rephrased that. How many times can your opponent do that to you before you really feel like I'm probably going to lose the game now?
You've been buried. It really depends on the matchup. Like when Jund starts burying you, it is very, if you are Jund and you're getting buried, it's very apparent that you're just going to lose because all their cards are 1-for-1.
Right.
And they can't really just win on the spot. Right. But for Twin, it's not as bad, because if you see their they're just drawing lands off Kronos, you can put them on having nothing and then just go for it, and sometimes you'll win.
Right.
Yeah.
So interesting. I was sort of thinking it must be after the second or the third time, you have to feel like you're kind of...
With Twin, you're always in the game because you can just win on the spot.
Which is why it's like such a good deck to play, I'm
sure. Yeah.
Interesting. Very cool.
Yes,
go ahead.
Last game. So this is game three of the essentially the PTQ finals. And I do the same thing that I did against my other friend. I just put back in the entire combo.
Right.
And he played a Jace, and then he didn't play a land. And then when he attempted to play a Spell Bomb to draw a card, I had the Spell Pierce. And once he got too far behind on lands, I Serum Visions, put Exarch on top. He Inquisitioned me. See, I didn't have any Exarch Pestermite, but I had Splinter Twin. He's like, all right, take Snapcaster. I'm like, okay, draw, go. He's like, all right, land. I'm like, okay, tap your land, tap your untapped land,
yeah,
and Twin you, right? He's like, all right. So I won that one through Serum Visions, keeping the Exarch on the top of my deck.
As you were saying before about how good Serum Visions actually is.
Yeah.
Your opinion on Serum Visions, like back at the beginning of the format when Preordain and Ponder and all those cards were legal, before the bannings and everything, there was this long stretch of time before Serum Visions was just like a more played card in decks. Like it started to catch on as this shouldn't just be a deck. Like
it's,
this combo
it's the
deck
second
needs
most
it.
Played card in Modern.
Yeah, now it is. I mean, it's come around now, obviously, with various iterations of the format, everything from, you know, Blue Red Delver to Twin and all that sort of flavors, and just other decks now that just play Serum Visions because it's just a good card to have. Do you think Serum Visions is just powerful because it's this deck is trying to draw such specific cards, or do you think that card is just should be played in like a lot of decks because it's just good?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's extra good in Twin, obviously, because of the card filtering, and it's extra good in the Grixis control decks just because it adds so many cards to your graveyard.
Right.
Like you can Serum Visions for a Thought Scour yourself, play an Angler, go. Like, it's that powerful.
Did you ever consider playing that Grixis deck?
I played that Grixis deck at the WMCQ, and it's so hard to just get wins with the deck just because it takes so long and it's such a mental drain that I was like, all right, I'm not going to play this deck anymore.
You chose not to play Control in competitive Magic?
Yeah.
It's not your style.
Yeah, I guess so. But it worked out. Whatever.
You're like always like aggressive aggro or Control, right? That's like your tense of your strategy. So you're always going to play like Affinity or Burn, or you're going to play like Twin or some control-y blue-black thing.
Yeah. In the
blue or aggro, that's what we'll say.
I tend to give up the most points in forest matchups.
Right, hate forests.
Yeah, forests are the worst. So, like, anytime I just have a nightmare of me at the Pro Tour at my Winnenin, and I'm playing Abzan versus Reed Duke, who's also playing Abzan, and then I just die.
Because he's just better at it.
He's had so many more reps than me that it's, like, it's not good.
So with this win, then, you get, like, another credit, another qualification. You can sandbag your others. So how many Pro Tours out now are you in line for?
I actually used my Silver Invite for the last one.
Oh, gotcha.
So I was not qualified for this one.
So,
now I am. And this is going to be my fourth consecutive Pro Tour.
It's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think so.
And you get to, if you keep playing, you'll keep getting points. You'll probably get another Silver qualification if you play as many tournaments this year.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to fly to a lot more tournaments now that I actually spiked this one. And they've actually upped the points threshold.
I saw that, yeah.
At the PT, and they've lowered the Silver threshold, so it's just going to be that much easier to requalify.
Interesting. Just once in our life, Kessler, we should try to be Silver. Just once.
We talked about it. Skip lagged,
yeah. We're going to do it.
There's an app that lets you... airlines frown on it, but it's technically fully legal. They tried suing the guy who came up with it, and they just got thrown out of court. But it's an app that lets you fly to events, but... Basically, there's an arbitrage between the amount of money you spend on a flight to, say, Atlanta if you stop somewhere on the way versus if you just go straight to the place you stop. So if, say, I want to go to Memphis, where it's cheaper to go to Atlanta where you stop in Memphis versus going directly to Memphis. So you just buy the Atlanta flight and you just don't get on your second flight. And as long as you don't have a checked bag, you just get a cheaper flight. And you can get, like, day of $100, $200 tickets to random places in the United States.
Yeah.
Go to skiplag.com. That's skip, just kidding.
Speaking of which, actually, before we continue on to other things, there are some advert-esque things. First off, make sure to follow us on Twitter. We just hit our 1,000th Twitter follower today.
Yeah, woo-hoo! We're going to send you a... a whole pile of commons that we talked about last week, and
yeah.
including Scythe Tiger and Survivor of the Unseen.
Yeah.
Gas.
It'd be great. The other thing is actually Brendan Weinhold, who was one of the stars of Top Decking, is currently kickstarting his next web series. It's called Gentle Werewolf. It's a Silicon Valley-esque show about werewolf guy who's not a bad guy. You can go to Kickstarter right now and check out that. There's cool prizes and stuff. Make sure to check that out. There'll be a link on rocketjump.com. And that's it until we get to later in the podcast. Let's continue with actually talking about stuff.
Well, and remember to check out the Command Zone. Talk about the,
true.
That's our sister Always. Podcast. Yeah. They do Commander content.
They're also on rocketjump.com.
Yeah, they do Commander content.
They'll have a spoiler on Thursday.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you want some Commander 2015 spoilers, check out Thursday. Their YouTube channel, they'll have it.
Super, super cool. Oh, yeah, actually, that's another thing. There's so many promos right now. We are going to be putting out video versions of this show.
True.
In the long future, as we've mentioned before, there will be like actual video things with us on camera, you'll see. But that'll be a while from now.
So we're going to do something similar to what the Command Zone's been doing for like forever since they started.
Right.
They're cheating because Josh Lequai is professionally an editor, so we had to like learn how to use a computer.
Mad cheats.
But same deal. We're going to have, you know, it's just our voices, but with cool visual content. We talk about a card. If we talk about a deck list, for instance, the Splinterton list that we talked about just now.
That you can find in the bottom.
It'll just be basically like, if you guys already listen on audio every week, then you may not have any interest. But if you listen to it on audio and you're sometimes sort of like, it would be nice if I could listen to this with card reference. Anytime we ever reference a card, it'll come up on screen for about 30 seconds. Anytime we reference a deck list, you'll see the deck list. It's just a little bit better. It's like more of a visual guide. So that can be found at youtube.com/webisodesnetwork.
Yes, but just search Top Decking TV on YouTube. You'll find it.
Yep. Nifty.
Cool. So let's move on. We are going to do a little bit of a quick card profile today.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about Jace Vryn's Prodigy, the newest Jace, the planeswalker flip creature looter thing that was sort of undervalued at first and seems to be coming into its own now.
Yeah, I think it hit our like ninth slot, and we talked way more about other planeswalkers, even when we did our Magic Origins focus on planeswalkers. But we were proved wrong, and this card seems to be...
The
Ultra
real deal.
Powerful.
Typical Jace fashion. Yeah. Oh, it's not going to be that good. Oh, my God. It's the best.
Well, like, I'm going to make a prediction, and this is me cheating because it's purely off the back that it's not going to be banned out of every format. But I think this Jace is going to see way more tournament play than the other Jace ever saw.
And Mind Sculptor?
That's cheating because I think he won't be banned in Modern and or Standard, so he's going to just have longer time to be able to be played.
Other Jace saw a lot of tournament play before getting banned.
For like 9 months, though.
Yeah, but it's continued to see like Vintage play legacy play forever.
Most pros that have talked about this new Jace in Vintage have said that this Jace is better than old Jace in Vintage.
Holy crap.
That's because you get repeatable Time Walk and Ancestral Visions and Brainstorm and all these effects that are just insane in that format.
Ancestral Recall.
Recall, yeah.
Seems like a good plan.
The good one.
Yeah, that one.
This price listed here on my app for this card is incorrect, correct? This has it listed at $73. That is not true.
No, that's blatantly correct.
That is a fact.
It's $73?
It was $83.
Wow, I must have missed the boat on this one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You haven't been paying attention to this. Yeah, Jace is the second Jace, literally, in the sense that it is the second time a Jace has been over $70 in Standard.
Wow. Yep. Like, I've been paying attention to like the list that shows up in and like talking about it, but I had no idea that it got that expensive.
Yeah.
Well, it's an unopened set, under open set. The most opened core set of all time, but still under opened.
Oh, compared to like
compared
major
to
expansions.
Like any set. It's a mythic. It's special because it's flippy, so the chances of being reprinted in something like a dual deck or something are extremely low.
It's Jace. People
he's
love
also
Jace.
Very, very strong in every format. And as soon as a Jace sees play in Legacy, he'll become an $80 card, apparently.
So let's talk about what Jace does. He is a legendary creature, human wizard, Jace Vryn's Prodigy.
Correct.
One blue, one colorless for a 0/2. Tap to draw a card, then discard a card. If there are five or more cards in your graveyard, exile Jace Vryn's Prodigy, then return him to the battlefield, transformed under his owner's control. When he comes back, he's a planeswalker called Jace Telepath Unbound, whose loyalty starts at 5. Plus 1. Up to 1 target creature gets -2/-0 until your next turn. -3. You may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard this turn. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead. And -9. You get an emblem with whenever you cast a spell, target opponent puts the top 5 cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard.
Irrelevant. But
once
Ben,
again, another irrelevant mill ability.
Read the second line again.
-3. You may cast target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard this turn. If that card would be put into your graveyard this turn, exile it instead.
Do not remand these spells, everybody. Do not remand them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Also great with buyback.
Yeah, right.
this is only relevant in the cube that I played last Sunday, and it was Powered Cube, and I had him, and I had Time Walk, and I definitely did that every single game.
So most,
into Time Vault, which was also fun.
So most notable, I think we're all on the same page about this, is that we've all been wondering what the appropriate blue 2-drop to play in your Grand Architect curve is going to be. And I believe we have found the newest one.
Probably the only one.
he references artifacts. He's good in multiples. Wait, what?
Yeah. One thing that is interesting, and since this is a modern podcast, is in all of the formats that Jace is going to be a powerhouse in, it's probably going to be the least of a powerhouse in modern, and that is specifically based on the fact of how many creature removal spells are in the format.
Correct.
So Legacy and Vintage, especially Vintage, where it's going to be a powerhouse because no one's playing creature removal in Vintage.
There's one swords in most decks.
That's true. It'll be hard to get there. But as we talked about last week, this is a format where the top three spells in the format are Lightning Bolt, followed by Serum Visions to find your Lightning Bolts, followed by Path to Exile, which also kills Jace. So it's a format just ripe with ways to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
But people have been talking about we need a way to get card advantage in this format. And this is kind of the Jace people have been asking for in many ways.
Yeah.
It's a sweet card. I don't think anybody playing Modern would ever say, even though it's powerful, that Snapcaster's not a fun card to have in the format. It's an awesome card. It's awesome in a ton of decks. It creates a ton of play. And this is essentially another way to do something similar. It's another card that exists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as powerful as Snapcaster, obviously, but it's another card that does cool things that will make games play in a similar way.
I've heard talk that it's comparable, and like power level-wise, it's not that far off, if not possibly the same power level, just because of the fact that
it's repeatable.
Repeatable is really, really good, and Snapcaster Mage forces you kind of keep your mana up at all times, or he can just kind of come down early in the key turn two, before Splinter Twin can be like, haha, if you cast a spell, I win, or Infect, or any of the other decks that have kind of that turn three, I win if you tap out factor, mm-hmm. and he'll just sit there, and if they don't deal with him, you're going to bury them in card advantage.
I think the one thing about this card, though, and the biggest difference is that we all know Modern is a format that exists on, like, the most important things that are happening between, like, two and four.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the decks are going to win at that point or set up their lock or what have you, combo out on turn four. The fact that Snapcaster can come down just as a beater on turn two or can, like, rebuy your Gataxian Probe on turn two if you want it to, the fact that it plays aggressively in those first turns is powerful, whereas you're not going to get to use this card until turn three at the earliest.
But you don't tap out for it. So, like, he comes down, he starts fetching you stuff, and he also, like, is great with Delve. There's, like, all these weird corner cases where he ends up being decent.
Not saying he's not good. Totally get it. I'm just saying the difference between this guy being really good and the difference between, like, say, like, a 4-drop being really, really good that creates card advantage, this guy's better, but it's not in the same way that Snapcaster is just going to be better than either of them, I think. But that's... I haven't played with it that much, so...
Well, currently, the only decks that play that card are Grixis Colors, and the reason Jace is so good is because he's a removal magnet which turns on all of your Kolaghan's commands.
Right.
So this card is just obscene with Kolaghan's command.
Makes sense, yeah.
Like, you can rebuy him and then play him again, play him, flashback your Kolaghan's command. You can just chain stuff into stuff into stuff, and, like, they can't come out from under it.
And those are also the decks that are playing all the Delve cards, so if he's online, he's heavily increasing it. Plus, you can, if you need to keep a looter, if you're, like, looking, you're more in the gas of, like, trying to sculpt your hand, you can use the Delve spells to keep him from flipping.
Yeah.
Or, you know, once you just get five cards in there, flip them, and then you can start rebuying stuff if you don't have the Delve needs.
You can also fog them if you have five cards in your graveyard, you block with it, and then you tap it, and you activate it. It's like a virtual fog.
Looters have always been interesting cards. Like, they're any like Magic player that has played like enough casual or draft, we all know like, looters are powerful. Like, they're not overtly powerful usually,
mm-hmm.
and there's some interesting ones in Modern that exist that don't really see any play. This is probably, other than Desolate Lighthouse, the only looter that's going to really see any play, right? Can you think of another card that loots? I guess Faithless Looting.
There's red loot rummaging cards, but
yeah,
or like
what's it called? I forget what it is, but flashback one red.
Yeah,
Faithless Looting.
Is it cool, Charm? Cool. See some play in some decks sometimes.
Well, like, Storm plays some of these, like, Ravings and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, creatures that do it repeatedly, I mean...
No, this is the only one.
Yeah, there are some interesting creatures.
But that's probably on the back that, like, the looting ability is just kind of...
Yeah.
It's not really... It's not the main focal
that's
point
not why
of the card. Yeah, yeah. You're playing the card because you get to
flashback ability.
Double Snapcaster Mage that can kind of also... Yeah. Like, the times I've let and or seen this car live...
The game is over.
The game is over.
How do you think it compares to some other turn two, turn three, like, value-ish Planeswalker? Say, like, Liliana. How does this compare to Liliana, do you think, on power?
Him and Liliana are trying to do different things, and they belong in two distinctly different decks. So I don't think it's a fair comparison between them. They are both Planeswalkers, and they do kind of try to bury your opponent in whatever you're trying to do. So I guess in that regard, they're similar. But Liliana is more of a, like, strip everybody of their resources, while Jace is more, I have infinitely more resources than you.
But the fact that we're talking about this card in the same conversation as Snapcaster Mage and Liliana is pretty remarkable, right? I mean, that means that this card is going to, in theory, is going to be a top 25 card pretty soon.
You asked that question, and the answer wasn't, oh, Liliana is just blatantly better.
Right, yeah.
The question was like, well, there's things that they're doing, and it's different than everything that Andrew said. So, like, that's showing the power level of what this card can be and or will be in the format.
Do you think it's possible we haven't experimented with the other Origins Planeswalkers in Modern enough, or do you think that this one is a fringe case?
This one is a fringe case. It's so big when it comes down to, like, 5 loyalty is a lot of loyalty. And once you plus it immediately, it goes to 6. And what are you going to do, double bolt it? No, you're not.
Did you practice with this card for the Pro Tour quite a bit?
That was the standard Pro Tour.
Right,
but in standard,
did you play with it? Did you
get Yeah. We played that card a ton. It's fantastic. It's so good in the Jeskai deck. The Dark Jeskai deck.
Right.
But I ended up playing Mono Red like a fool, but whatever.
That Dark Jeskai deck, like, they came up with it and they were playing it. Did you guys have, like, that deck built also?
We had that deck built, no Taskers.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because everybody just saw the opportunity to play all the colors and just
the
best cards.
Well,
Crackling Doom is really good.
Well, that's a list that I would imagine also is very difficult to kind of lock down what colors you need to or what exact cards. Because once you're at 4 colors, it's like
everything. Goes.
Yeah. What don't you play at this point?
Well, like, Crackling Doom was like a shoe-in in all the decks, right?
Well, that was because that did well at the SEG event the 2 weekends before the Pro Tour. So, like, the Dark Jeskai with that card just by itself was seeing play. It was the, like, additional pieces that definitely threw it over the top.
Okay, so if let's just quickly just for, like, we'll play, like, a name game on ranking this card all time in Planeswalker speak. And obviously, I know it's a little unique because it comes down as a creature, but we can all agree that, like,
If this is being included in the Planeswalker conversation, which it is.
Mind Sculptor is number 1, right?
Yep, sure.
And most of us believe that Liliana is number 2, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, I can get behind that.
And Liliana's 2, and that would mean that this original Elspeth is 3?
Classically,
I think this one is definitely better than Elspeth.
So this is the third best Planeswalker we've ever seen already. Is that, like, a thing? We're, like, on board with this.
It depends in the context, but in the current flavor, yes.
That's very impressive. 2 of them are Jaces. That's impressive too.
I think the most undiscovered space with this card so far is in 4 color Jund decks. Having a Flashback Thoughtseize, Flashback Inquisition on turn 3 into a Tarmogoyf seems powerful to me, but I don't know about the mana base and everything. So,
I mean, theoretically, that deck, I mean, if there is a good removal spell to be played in it, and that's probably Dismember at this point, but doing a green-black-blue, which has been always a deck that has been the, like, the redheaded stepchild of the green-black decks. Mm-hmm. Right, but most, like, for those decks to function, you need the 8 removal spells. You need the 4 decay plus the 4 Path Slash Lightning Bolt. And blue doesn't really have that. Now, that doesn't mean there's not, like, Jace does offer a lot of versatility in the sense that you can buy back things and you can maybe find the whatever removal spell end up playing. And with Tassigar, there are many different reasons to play that deck. I'd be very interested to see if Jace starts birthing other archetypes that couldn't exist before now.
Jace is also very good with Lightning Bolt, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's amazing with Lightning Bolt.
which is where he feels the most like Snapcaster Mage, because that's
what
Snapcaster's a good one. So this card is over $70. It's $70-$80 now.
Yep.
From Origins, the other cards that are most expensive are Hangerback Walker and Abbott, right? Those are the other two big
ones. Abbott's only 7, I think. Yeah. Isn't the burn spell more than Abbott right now?
I have no idea.
Oh, Firecraft?
Exquisite Firecraft.
There's a few $7 cards, but the two main ones are Hangerback and Jace.
Yeah.
I mean, boxes of Magic cards are like, what, $100, $110? Something like
that? So actually, this article came out. I think Chaz Andres did it, who was on the cast before. He compared a pack of each set and how much which one is the most worth opening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not including Expeditions, Cons wins. It goes like cons, and then by like 5 cents dragons, and then by like 50 cents origins. Because like you're playing the Jace Lottery,
yeah,
but every other card in that set is kind of at a much lower level.
Unless you believe that long-term Abbott is going to be what everybody thinks it's going to be.
Right, and like their theoretically Nyssa is probably like any of the other flip planeswalker. Or
yeah,
two of the
they have long, they have long-term value.
But Origins currently won by like a long shot if you include the Expeditions.
Interesting.
Mind you, that's also based
you
off
mean
the value.
Battle for Zendikar?
BFC.
Yes, I 100% Battle for Zendikar. Because just the Expeditions add like 90 cents per pack.
Yeah, it's just a huge lottery.
Which is just a huge jump. And yeah, like, that's also kind of factoring in prices post Pro Tour on the set, which are not going to be what they are in 2 months. When, I mean, like right now, what in Battle for Zendikar is seeing play other than Gideon?
Yeah, well, nothing.
Right. Yeah. Though another interesting comparison back to Jace with Gideon is a lot of people have compared the two of them to Stoneforge Mystic and Jace before.
Yeah.
Right. Where back then it was a smaller threat plus a bigger card advantage engine, and now it's the bigger threat with a smaller card advantage engine, but they both kind of play in a very similar way in what they're doing with Dark Jeskai.
Gideon's a pretty good card, I think.
Gideon is a fantastic Magic card.
Like, Gideon might be up there in the top five Planeswalker conversation, possibly.
Yeah. Well, just his non-multi-format diversity.
Yeah.
Is probably the big thing holding him back.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's kind of it for Jace. Is there any other last things you want to say about that? Oh,
no.
On a pickup thing, I'd still wait to pick this up. Yeah. I'd wait till rotation. We're now currently in that weird new rotation world where...
Yeah, it's not going to last as long.
Like, it's only going to be in standard until next, like,
summer.
So, like...
Well, it isn't saying that much Eternal play yet where it should be able to maintain 80 for a long time. Like, it should drop to 55 at some point.
Yeah, it'll go down. It'll definitely be below 70.
It'll stagnate at probably 40, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... definitely keep an eye on it. The moment it goes below 50 is the moment to start picking them up. Because unless it sees, like, it starts being in that bubble of, this card should be banned.
I would say even more than that. If it drops into that $40, $50 range, and you can, like, on eBay, you can start to look for cheap foils, I'd get, like, a couple foils this card.
I would get foils now. Because and that's the other thing, and I don't know if this is true anymore because I haven't looked it up, but a week ago I was having this conversation where the Comic-Con exclusive versions of these, so that sets are still really only selling for $250 to $300.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And him himself in it is worth like $150+, which is also low probably in the long run.
Yeah.
Because this is a vintage staple now.
Yeah.
So like... those Comic-Con things, if you can find a set of them for under $300, I'd snap pick those up. I mean, and you have $300 to throw around, which is not true for everyone, but like those are the kind of places where you're going to get a lot of value. And foil Jaces right now are probably also pretty low. Because standard players, which is a lot of what this price is coming from, don't care.
About foils, yeah.
Ooh, this is also a pretty sweet one, too. If you buy the foil Comic-Con set, you don't have to shuffle it and play it in your deck, because you can just use the checklist cards.
Checklist cards, yeah.
And so then when you play it, you can look extremely pimp and bring out your...
Comic-Con Jace?
Comic-Con Jace, yes. Yeah.
Which I'll be doing, because I have those Comic-Con Jaces, because I go to Comic-Con and wait in that stupid line for 12 hours. Weren't you at the last one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I think that pretty much wraps us up.
Yeah, so once again, make sure to follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm at Kes Wiley, and you don't have a Twitter, or you do?
I don't use it.
Okay, so to see all these sweet lists that Andrew has been playing in these modern events, check out rocketjump.com as well.
Yep.
Make sure to check out the Command Zone. They're our sister podcast. They do awesome Commander content. As I said earlier in the cast, they will be having a spoiler this Thursday, which is either going to be, depending on when you listen to this, tomorrow or today.
Yeah.
And that should be pretty sweet. Beyond that, make sure we're at the MMCast. I don't think we actually said our Twitter. Thanks for following us, guys. We have 1,000 Twitter followers. Oh, I remember. We have a Facebook now, too.
Oh,
We like associate ourselves with the YouTube channel. We now have a Facebook. We're like getting better at the internet. We can edit on computers now.
Yep.
It's crazy. Before, I used to just like print this all on like film tape and actually cut it in a back room.
Wow.
Yeah. It was crazy.
I'll go like you guys right now.
Oh, thank you.
Well.
Thank you, man. Question. We a few weeks ago, we did a brew episode on here, and we're going to do another one pretty soon here, either next week or the week after. And I'm going to just name two cards right now, and then Kessler's going to name two cards right now. And then you, our Twitter fans, you're going to tell us which of those four cards you want to see Kessler and I do a brew challenge where we're each going
to... Two cards. You have to pick two of the cards we name.
Okay, so we each will have to use both...
We're going to name four cards between the two of us.
Yep. And then we will each have to come up with like our own brew.
Sure.
That
using two of those cards that you guys vote on Twitter.
Okay, my two cards are Spellskite and Jay's Friend's Prodigy.
That was such the laziest choices. Vengevine.
Forests.
And Terminate.
How about Esper Charm and Crackling Doom?
Wow. There okay. you go. That's there you go. Six cards.
So you're gonna, so you guys are going to vote. The two highest voted ones will have to both be included in our deck lists.
Sure.
And Kessler and I will build cool things and talk about them on the podcast.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Sweet. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for coming on, Andrew.
Yeah, no problem, man.
All right. Check us out on YouTube.
Yeah, bye, guys. See you next week.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.